The podcast you're about to hear is made possible thanks to the generous supporters of patreon.com/Ian Bolesworth and patreon.com/burials and beyond. If you enjoy this podcast and you'd like to contribute and you'd like to get involved, there's tons of other content on both patrons as well, then please consider coming joining and helping the project along. Thank you.
And welcome to Loopholes, your weekly discussion podcast about all things esoteric and esoterotic.
Yes.
I am Kate Cheryl. Hello.
Hello, Kate. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
You're dropping doctor. You're dropping doctor now.
Well, I thought we're cash, aren't we?
Beg your pardon.
We're settled. We're having a chat.
I've never heard somebody like seriously use the word cashmere. Oh man, though. I'm Ian Bolesworth. And what I want to do as well, by the way, before we get any further, feedback, because we didn't really do that last week and there were loads of comments.
Yeah.
So I'm going to get comments in straight away. They're mainly still fixating on Uri Geller. There was relative success in your Geller U-turn.
Yeah.
But still sort of chipping a little bit, not at you, but at Geller certainly.
Right,
and
okay.
It is a worry, because he is, as you said last week, very litigious man. So I don't know whether if we give a platform to the comments, if we're then accountable for that legally. I think we are.
Well, if we're quoting, I think we're pretty safe.
There's nothing too bad, in fairness. Stephen Harper was one of the people that came round to you. Who said,
good. Thanks, Stephen.
Kate might be on something here. Yesterday, he issued, this is Uri Geller, he issued a very antagonistic statement to Vladimir Putin, saying he will use every molecule of his mind power to stop him launching missiles. Maybe the Russians will come for him, RIP, as predicted by Kate.
And he did. That's
Geller did.
Uri Geller did issue a warning to the Kremlin.
A warning?
That he would... Well, Stephen nailed it. He would use every last molecule of his mind power to turn back any nuclear warheads aimed at Britain.
Just Britain?
I think so. So it's a very focused military defence option.
So he's watched Russia bomb the Ukraine with indifference.
I mean, he's probably had a go at stopping it.
Is that correct? That wasn't a statement by me. I must stress to the jury... I wasn't making a statement then. I was questioning, has he watched them bomb the Ukraine with indifference?
There's one thing that we need to be very clear about.
Yeah.
Most of his threats announcements are via Instagram.
And does Putin follow him on Instagram?
Well, I presume so. I haven't checked his follow account.
This is my personal feeling, this.
Okay.
Not a statement of fact.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about him being harmless.
Yes.
I think this is a bit more...
grey area, isn't
it? Yeah, it does feel a bit like that. Because what's obviously going on with Russia and the Ukraine is... however you look at it, utterly horrific.
Yeah.
You know, to be what you could perceive as piggybacking huge tragedy to peddle your wares.
Yeah, completely.
I have more of a problem with that.
Yeah, it's one thing to say if we use our mind power to heal David Beckham's foot, we can win the Euros or whatever.
Yeah. Cause,
but then to say...
That's a relatively harmless thing. But I think to use the war in Ukraine...
As a platform, absolutely.
As something to, you know, to boost your career with.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't like that.
No, me neither.
Another comment that we had, by the way, John M. Mm-hmm. just doesn't get this.
Oh, okay.
Loving this podcast, to his credit.
Thank you, John.
But I have two stupid questions.
No questions ever stupid, John.
One,
fire away.
Is this podcast about finding stroke proving something, or is it just a general chat about paranormal stuff? And two, what exactly is a loophole in this context? Is it just an answer for a potentially paranormal phenomenon?
Yes.
Is that your answer to that?
To all questions, yes.
Well, thing is, John, as I think I said in another episode, we're finding our feet with it as well. So I guess the general premise is, the loopholes there, you're correct, in different fields of esotericism, it's finding the bits within those that are actually kind of proven as being flawed. Really.
Yes.
They're the loopholes in the story. Yeah. And kind of then looking at what's left, really, which is pretty much what Kate will do, because I'll just say, nah, that's nonsense. Ergo, all of it is nonsense. I'm a very simple man. But it's not about finding or proving something, I don't think, is it?
No, really? I think that's why we say it's a discussion.
Yeah.
Because we're not arguing our corners, really. We both come to fields of esotericism.
Yeah.
With kind of a similar mindset, even if we don't have the same belief systems.
But I've always been very interested in
exactly, and that's where we've got that common ground.
You don't know what I was going to say then.
That we've still got
I said interest. I've always been very interested in, and you are all over me. This is what they do. Oh, this is God. What the paranormal
Who's
community
they?
Do. They shout
they?
You down.
It's like this all the time.
They talk over you.
Hasn't even made me
down.
A cup of tea. I've been here for hours.
They have a proper awful. Dig at you. They cut you off when they're scared that you've got their number.
Would you like a glass of water?
Matt Connell said, I'm sure this hasn't escaped you again as biggest fan, but just in case it has, the latest in his Legacy of Lunacy. Great show, by the way. Thank you, Matt. The mysteries that gave birth to the world's newest micronation. Now, this has always been the case with me.
Yes.
Always.
Okay.
Send me a link. I'm not clicking it.
Good.
It's not that I'm disinterested in what you say or anything like that. I just don't click through on links.
Well, that's played quite nicely into my hands because okay. Matt has struck on a very important point here.
Tim Dawson's really enjoying these. Really interesting and informative.
Well, let's see if we can tip Tim over the edge yeah. with this. Our mate Yuri has bought an island.
Whoa.
Yes.
No, not our mate. He's the bit
It's a very small island. It's uninhabited.
Your mate.
And he bought this little island called Lamb right. off the coast of Scotland, where he thinks witch bones are buried. And he thinks it's the most mystical island in the world. He thinks there are connections with, like, the Bible, ooky spooky witchy business with ancient Egypt. Oh, there's ley lines.
Right.
And he camped on the island because there's loads of birds there, and he was like, oh yeah, there's definite ley lines, mate. So Yuri is now owner and landlord to Lamb.
Right.
And there are, you know, thousands of guillemots and puffins and things like that.
Okay.
It's technically a micronation.
I don't know what that is.
So it's still technically a nation, and therefore it can have citizenship.
Right.
I've got something for you that I'd like to present to you in real time. This is for you.
Thank you very much. So this is a very gaudy Hello Kitty folder.
I'm a professional, thank you.
Right. Official Certificate of Citizenship. This document certifies that Ian Bolesworth, that's me, is a citizen of Lamb Island, the most mysterious land in the world, existing in peace and harmony with all fellow Lamb Island citizens and the species which dwell there. Approved by Yuri Geller on the 12th of August, 2022. Tell me you've not spent money on this.
Do you want to...
How much was this?
I mean, we've both got citizenship. I couldn't let you have one and not have...
How much was this?
Well, Yuri bought the island for $46,000.
Right.
Well, but you can buy citizenship, but all the...
No, I'm asking you how much
all
the
proceeds.
Was.
I know. All the proceeds go to charity.
I don't care about any of that. How much have you paid for this scrap of paper?
I had to print it myself.
How much was it?
86p.
86p? Yeah. Is that genuinely true?
It's genuinely true, don't worry.
Okay, that's fine. That's okay then. I've no issue with that at all.
Okay.
That's worth it for the joke. However, I do see this as a legal document. Very much. So I can live on Lamb.
Yeah.
Because I am a citizen of Lamb.
Yeah.
What's he doing? Do you think he's just bored? So he's paid $46,000.
Yes.
Who's got that to spare for something like this?
Well, I think his museum must be doing very well.
I think this is heartbreaking, you know. I do, but I also feel like I want to take some sort of action.
Yeah.
I feel like now that I am a citizen,
yeah.
I want to take some sort of action. I want to do something. I want to overthrow him on the island. Have I got to change my passport, by the way?
Maybe. Yeah.
Don't I need to let the UK know that I have got joint citizenship now with Lamb? I mean, that's the other part of this as well.
Yeah.
How can someone go on the internet and make someone a citizen of somewhere else
yeah,
without their knowledge?
There wasn't a lot of checks, really. It was just putting your name in and paying on PayPal.
Well, it seems like we're the enemy within, or I am, certainly.
Yeah, you have infiltrated... Yuri's inner circle.
I think somebody needs to let Yuri know now
yeah.
that I'm a citizen of his island and that I'm a bad lot. My goal on
yeah.
this podcast from now onwards is to have my citizenship
revoked.
Of Lamb completely revoked by the President Geller.
Okay.
I want to be barred from the island as well.
Right.
By all means, set your certificate.
I'm going to go and visit the puffins.
Stick it up your ass. No, take your certificate. You go and
yeah.
visit, by all means.
Yeah.
I want to be barred from that. I want some sort of...
You want beef with Geller.
The problem is I could wave this about and claim I've got diplomatic immunity. The other thing we could do, for the sake of 86p, and I appreciate that it's an unpalatable thing maybe for some people to give him any cash.
Mm-hmm.
If you could stomach it, we could raise a nation here and overthrow him. We could all become citizens.
This is an excellent
If all
plan.
His citizens are against him.
Yeah. Are you going to be the new leader of LAMP?
No, I'm not going to take on any like heavy lifting or nothing like that. Okay. I don't really do anything I've got to think about too long.
So you're more just like, you want to be a symbolic head of state.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So I want to sort of sit in my office and just check emails every now and again. Yeah.
Okay.
And go, oh, brilliant. They've burnt some more of it.
And welcome to Loopholes, episode 4.
It's honestly unbelievable. He could sell snow to the Inuits. He could, do you know what I mean, though?
Yeah. He's just relentless. I think his mind just works overtime, constantly.
Them's the bits I don't mind, but the bits that I do mind, the Ukraine thing, I do mind that.
Yes.
That bothers
me. There's a real duality to him. There's, for every kind of fun and frivolous spoon car,
yeah,
there's something else that stops you in your tracks. And
but it's also on a logistical level as well. The, you know, the idea of going, right, one more, and I promise you I'm going to stop you doing it.
Yeah.
If you have that power to do that, you should have done that months ago.
Yeah.
But he ain't got that power to do that. I will state that. I've got no problem with stating that. But he ain't got that power at all.
His shtick does seem to be, of late, especially with things like the ship stuck in the Suez Canal.
Yeah.
It's been, you know, one more day, and yeah, I am going to bend the arse off this
boat. I'm going to fix that in another day, when you've probably started fixing it yourselves. Because I don't think anyone, like the Suez Canal ship and all that, when he, so it was positive thinking, turned this stuck oil tank around, right?
Yeah.
I don't think anyone who was in charge of that situation or was taking charge of that situation was getting ready to get it shifted and then went, oh, hang on, we don't have to do anything. Yuri Geller's going to do it tomorrow. Yeah. And I think Yuri knows that. So I think he's probably going, all right, so probably one more day, they'll probably start shifting it. So I'll say that I'm going to shift it in one more day as well and then take credit for it. Anyway, what are we going to talk about today for loopholes?
Today...
Do you have loopholes, things we can talk about?
Well, I do.
Because that island is a loophole in and of itself. It's got puffins on it. Ergo, it's mystical. Talking about, mate.
Got witch bones and puffins.
No. Let's actually apply loopholes to this. Let's rip this apart then right now then.
Okay.
What are witch bones?
Bones of a witch.
Is this people that have been declared as witches back in horrific olden days? Because in that case, most of England has got witches' bones, quote unquote.
Oh, yeah.
Buried. But they weren't witches, were they not? They were victimised women is what was going on.
Yeah.
And abused women.
Yeah.
So is Yuri Geller, is he going along with that story?
I don't know, because with the promo, it seems to be pretty based in ancient Scottish history.
Yeah, I want to hear more about these bones is what I want to hear about. Give me the direct quote about the witches' bones, please.
Right. Hundreds of years ago, there were witches in Scotland and England, and we all know what happened to them. And there were witches near North Berwick, where my island is. The rumour of these witch bones emanated from a very important person.
Okay, first...
So I can't say who.
Does he not say who it is?
But they say there are remnants of these witches on Lamb Island.
Okay, well, first up, the witches that you're talking about weren't witches. That's one. And saying we all know what was going on. Yeah, we do all know what was going on there. Exactly. It's not something to shove in your publicity for your island.
Yeah.
Secondly, I am a citizen of this island, Yuri, and I would like to know all about these bones, please. I want a full explanation of the bones that are beneath the soil that I was brought up on. I want to know, as a citizen of Lamb, about these bones, please. And why that equals mystical. Because it would only equal mystical if they were actually witches. And I think we can all generally agree, ain't no such thing as a witch in the way that they were talking about witches.
Yeah, but there is...
Would you agree with that, by the way? That's an interesting point. Would
you
agree
with 16th century sort of witch trials...
That there was no such thing as what they were accusing them of.
Yeah.
There was no such thing as
absolutely
that.
Absolutely not. No, it was religious hysteria.
Yeah.
Abhorrent period of time.
Yeah,
There was no ooky spooky witchcraft.
Ergo, they are the bones of regular folk.
Yeah.
Who were persecuted and ultimately murdered.
Yes.
So why are they mystical? That's my question to you, El Presidente. Why are the bones mystical, please? Why does it make it mystical? Why are they mystical bones, please? That's a question from me that I'll be raising at our first community centre meeting at Lamb, when myself and all my patrons, and I presume all yours as well, will all be there in Lamb Community Centre.
That we are building
and
tomorrow.
And I want to see Yuri Geller stare back at us with, in his eyes, this was a really bad idea. What are you going to be telling us about today on Loopholes? What's your topic for
today? Today, we are going to have a chat about poltergeists.
Brilliant. So, like you've not got me in a bad enough mood. Oh, ghosts. This is a good point. So, ghosts. Okay. This is about ghosts.
Yes.
And you had to remind me of something.
Yes.
My ghost seekers blacklist.
Yes. That I have. Yes.
My list of things. Loopholes within the structure of what people believe that I've spotted over the years, and many people have spotted them as well. I'm not claiming I'm the big I am. I've told them about that before. So what I wanted to tell you about, this is in relation to what we spoke about last week, is the placing of innocuous information.
Yes.
Which is something that I certainly spotted in my time around these people.
Mm-hmm.
So if I give you an example, this is true, this, by the way. When my grandma died, what you need to know within this, she sang a lot, We'll Meet Again, Vera Lynn song, right? Mm-hmm. Now, very standard, very well-known song, okay? It was quite a while after she died. My granddad and I were clearing out in their front bedroom, which they didn't use, but it was the front bedroom. Some of her clothes were in the front bedroom, okay? And we were clearing those clothes out. And he was quite good about it, really, my granddad, about getting rid of stuff. You know, he kept stuff he wanted to keep, and then other stuff, he was quite ruthless, might be too strong a word, but you know what I mean? He was mm-hmm. on it. As we were doing this, it's in a terraced house in Sutton in St Helens. We're doing this, and it was the wardrobe nearest to the window. There were two wardrobes, and in the middle, there was a half wardrobe with a little dresser thing in the middle of it. And as I was clearing out the one that was nearest the window, I was very, very aware that We'll Meet Again was going around my head. Very aware of it, which is an obvious thing, because it was kind of synonymous with my grandma. Not as much as it was synonymous with Vera Lynn, but it was, mm-hmm. to me, you know. And there was also, I guess, the idea, because she was away now, my grandma, and the We'll Meet Again, sort of, I don't know, there's something about that.
Mm.
As I'm moving clothes, and my granddad's moving clothes as well, and we were both upset, but it wasn't like a sob fest. Even now it's a hard thing to sort of explain. I could hear it. It wasn't just in my head. I could hear the song. To the point where I actually thought it might be like next door or somewhere. Like they might have been just coincidence. They might have been playing it because it's a terrace house.
Mm-hmm.
And I eventually said to my granddad, I went, can you hear that? And he said, We'll Meet Again. I went, yeah. And both of us were like, where's that coming from? I can't explain it. Where it was. It wasn't next door. You know, when we went nearer to the wall, it wasn't strong or anything like that. It was just there. But it was like a shared experience. And I think that's the closest I've ever got, really, to anything that was like, I can't really explain that at all. A feeling like she was present, even though she was away. And I also don't really have, when I think back about it, any recollection of it stopping. I don't know when it stopped. I can't hear it now, do you know what I mean? But yeah. I don't know when it stopped. And I don't know why we wouldn't have been more... Maybe we were, maybe I've just forgotten. But I don't know why we wouldn't have been more like, oh my God, what's happening? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't recall there being anything like that. It was just, we were both just a little bit... I think we were frightened.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't like a big shock. Why are you staring at me?
That's all a lie, isn't it?
Yeah, all of it.
Yeah, all of it.
Every last
Very good.
It.
Very
but
good.
The thing with it is, it's the placing.
Yes.
That story does not work at all without the placing of We'll Meet Again. Without the placing of... My grandma always used to sing that song.
Yeah.
She didn't. I didn't get rid of my grandma's stuff with my granddad.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't do that at all. He would have found that very, very difficult. You know, all the things I was saying in there. I described the room.
I liked that. I liked that detail. When you were saying that, I thought,
but it
ooh,
didn't
that's a good
matter
one.
To the story in terms of why would I tell you that information? The reason you tell people that information is to give the story credibility.
Mm-hmm.
Where the wardrobe was in the room, none of that matters at all.
Yeah.
So placing those things, innocuous information that's placed in a story that has no business being there, and when you actually rip it apart, what the loophole is within the story is, why did he tell us that? And you accept those things because they're not ridiculous claims.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I've noticed
when
people tell me ghost stories, is the placing of information that has no business being there.
So basically, what you've done in that story
is
that you've basically completed a checklist
of
things to include when telling a paranormal experience.
Yeah. So with that in mind then, if a story does contain those things, are we to be suspicious of that story?
I think we're already in a grey area because, yes, that method can be used to fake truth when there is none there, but also I do think whenever we're telling a story or an experience with an element of something quite fantastical in it, even if it's true, if something really bizarre happened to us, doesn't have to be spooky, I think we naturally want to add more details to ground it in reality. It's tricky to say this is a template for finding loopholes, when really this is how we talk about the esoterotic.
So it's keeping an eye out for though, isn't it?
Oh, definitely.
When someone's over-explaining.
Yeah.
And the problem is as well, is we're now, I think, in this section far too long, so I don't think we can do Poltergeist this week. That's what I've managed to do. Do you want to do Poltergeist in the next section?
No, we're doing Poltergeist now.
Okay,
come on.
In the next section now. Right, go on, Poltergeist. I should warn you now, I've got a history of being quite impatient with this.
Poltergeists,
yeah.
for the uninitiated...
Yes, which is everybody.
...are essentially noisy... Thank you. ...are essentially noisy spirits, noisy ghosts...
Yeah.
...that aren't just responsible for loud noises, but can move objects, create foul smells, can create fires.
Yeah. So am I a poltergeist? So have I got to die to be a poltergeist, or can you be a poltergeist in waiting?
Poltergeists are generally reported to haunt specific people rather than locations.
Oh, is that right?
According to most of the early reports, and that's what I'm quite excited about.
Now, what are these reports from? Where are we finding these reports?
All over the world.
Just written on walls? What? Where?
Most of these early instances of reported poltergeist activity are kind of European and kind of 16th century, 17th century. That's when we get these collected works of reported tales from countries of people that have experienced
dodgy phenomena. So where are you reading them now?
Most of these books, like arguably the first really recorded poltergeist or the first book on Elizabethan spiritualism, as it would be, is a book called Of Ghosts and Spirits by a Swiss man called Luz Levata. It's basically a compendium of like ghosts and survival spirits, things like that. It's kind of like the go-to for Elizabethan spiritualism and seeing poltergeist reports in kind of their earliest form. And reportedly, Shakespeare even consulted this work himself when he was writing the ghost scene in Hamlet. So these works were very well known.
The ghost in Hamlet wasn't a poltergeist. It's Hamlet's dad. But what chucking kettles about?
Well, maybe he edited that bit out.
Well, but that so things like that. There's a loophole within that. So what you just did then is you stated something that gave something credence, is what you did. You went, and actually, Shakespeare, the Bard of Avon, actually consulted this
book. I said
book.
May have.
All right, may, well, even that, may have. Mm-hmm. But that comment, forgive me, means nothing.
Oh, it doesn't. I'm not saying that it legitimizes these reports.
It could just be like that was the first place Shakespeare had a ghost. Man, oh, that's a good idea. I'll put a ghost. I'll put one of these nonsense things in my play. My made up play.
So they were in the public mindset. Really, the first instance of the word poltergeist in the English language, because it's a German word, was quite late considering, and that was in 1848.
Okay.
It was brought to the UK in a book called The Night Side of Nature, which is a fantastic resource for anyone who's interested in kind of ghosty history.
Right.
And that was written by a woman. It was written by Catherine Crowe.
Right.
Which I think really should be celebrated more.
Okay.
That regardless of your beliefs on the matter, for centuries, a lot of these reports on esotericism were written by men in the royal court or male scientists that were just adding to their own libraries, whereas really something that was quite big was headed up by a woman.
Here's a question.
Okay.
And I don't mean anything by this, by the way.
Yes.
I'll flag this up by that. I don't mean anything by it. Mm-hmm. I've just got two questions. The first question is, back in the olden days, when these books were coming out, was the general mood one of belief? So was it that people just accepted and believed these things? Or was it as sceptical as I guess modern day would be as well? Were the people saying it was nonsense?
We've got to take into account just kind of the religious landscape of the time.
Yeah, okay.
We live in a very secular society today, whereas, you know, in the 16th century.
Yeah.
And in the Elizabethan court in particular, you've got all that horrific upheaval and persecution again based on kind of a monarch's personal beliefs. So it was an incredibly politically and religiously charged landscape, a religiously divided landscape. The penalties for outwardly going against the wishes and the religious wishes of the monarch
Yeah.
Was so severe that it was a death wish.
So I guess there's no way of finding out, is there? Cause,
no.
Because I guess records would say
that if someone said, oh, by the way, I think it's a load of drivel, your neighbours might top you in. It wouldn't be.
And my second question was as well, would you say that the majority of people who subscribe genuinely to belief in the paranormal are primarily women? Because I reckon Mumsnet will be full of it. Myself personally, but as I said before, I don't mean anything by this. I mean, literally as a point of interest. Do you think it's heavily weighted?
I think women may be more open to kind of exploring spirituality and alternative spiritualities.
My personal experience of it has been that, but I'm aware that the pool that I have to fish from isn't necessarily definitive. So I'm just saying, my personal experience has been that most of my encounters with people who believe in that. Mm-hmm. The majority have been women, but that may just be by coincidence within my own personal experience.
Yeah, I think really there's, again, I can only speak from my own personal experience as well, but I think when we're looking at active paranormal investigations, there are a lot of men.
But see how I see that though, is I see them as the opportunist people. So I see them as like the people that do Facebook Lives and all that sort of stuff. I don't necessarily subscribe to the idea that they genuinely believe it. Maybe they do, but my take on that, my read of that is they don't believe it. They're exploiting it for business opportunity.
Right. If we're looking at popular media that would assist with that sort of thing, that would assist with personal spiritual development, a lot of that popular media takes the form of women's weeklies. If we're looking at print media, of course.
Yeah. Well, to get us back to Poltergeists, that was a little girl, wasn't it, in Poltergeist?
Actually, Frank Podmore, who wrote some enormous tomes on modern spiritualism, he came up with a theory about poltergeists.
That they could come through the telly.
It was called...
I know it's not been invented yet, but one day they will come through the telly and she will turn around and say, they're here.
It was called the naughty little girl theory.
Right, okay.
Which links in with the fact that a lot of these poltergeist reports, a lot of these investigations, have a lot of young women or prepubescent women at their centre, at their focus.
This is the problem with this discussion, but what can I, as a middle-aged man, say about this? Do you know what I mean? Anything that I pass as opinion on this could be perceived as being touch and go, or could be twisted to be touch and go. Do you know what I mean? So how can I? That's totally true. That's bang on the money, isn't it? Enfield was exactly that.
Yeah.
Which is probably a definitive illustration of what you've just talked about.
Oh, yeah.
So two girls, whatever they were, 11 and 14, something like that. I can't remember how old they were. But you've got two lasses there.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look at that story, even though I have laughed about it previously and said, oh, they're dodgy or they've lied and blah, blah, blah. The people that I've always held accountable, or the person I've always held accountable, is the middle-aged man that was involved.
Yes, okay.
In Guyline Playfair, who wrote the book, This House is Haunted.
Mm.
And he was there stoking the fires of this story, along with Maurice Gross.
Mm.
And by the way, I also believe Guyline Playfair was exploiting.
Mm-hmm. There's a great duality to him as well, because although he was an investigator for the Society for Psychical Research, he had experienced great trauma and loss.
This is Maurice Gross.
Maurice Gross, because he lost a child.
Yeah.
And so I do think, well, like you say, Enfield is kind of the perfect example.
Well, he's halfway there, isn't he? Like, yeah. Maurice Gross, before he's even spoke to the girls, is halfway there in wanting this.
Yeah, theory. As professional as he is, because of his own personal experiences, he could be a credulous witness.
Yeah, completely. And Guyline Playfair couldn't have not known that. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. So I'm not even being accusatory. I'm just saying there's no way he didn't know that. Him knowing that reeks of exploitation.
Yeah.
In his perpetuation of that story, in writing the book, in wheeling these lasses out, allowing the people that were there to either believe it or abetting them in faking it.
Mm.
Whichever way it was still exploitation.
Yeah, I do see it as a deeply flawed case. This isn't a reflection on, you know, my beliefs as to whether or not there was a ghost.
Mm.
But just from an ethical perspective, it seems like a bit of a minefield. It seems like there was a kind of failure of duty of care on all parts, not just to the girls, but to the investigators.
What is your belief in the Enfield case specifically? Which I don't want to go over the whole thing, because
I've
spoke about that on other things anyway. So I think most people know the general story, which was two lasses in North London in Enfield basically said they had a ghost.
Things were being chucked about.
Yeah.
One of them was possessed, said, my name is Bill, I went blind, and then I had a hemorrhage, and I died.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff.
And then they were chucked about in their bedroom. That's basically a summary.
Yeah.
I find it really interesting, and with other poltergeist cases, I feel like I can have really strong, straight-down-the-line views. But with this, I am really wishy-washy, because I do find it such an interesting case, because much of the evidence excites me. But also, the girls were proven and caught faking.
Yeah, lying. Yeah.
Yeah. And although it seems like a really clumsy and easy way to treat something, to say, if you're caught once faking it, it discounts everything before.
Yeah.
I do come across that a lot in the paranormal, especially with mediums as well.
Well, I did that. I said exactly that.
Yeah.
You have been caught. Everything you now say is suspect. Now, I stand by that, but I also do acknowledge that isn't definitive. That if someone lies about one thing, they are lying about everything.
Yeah.
I do understand the idea that's put forward of, well, there was a lot of pressure on them to make sure that things, you know, kept going and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. That I don't buy, insofar as in those moments, you don't have time to construct a lie.
Yeah.
If it's real. If you were actually experiencing the things you say you were experiencing, no way would you make some up as well, because you would be adamant. It would be frustrating.
But also, just to play devil's advocate, we're also dealing with children. You know, on the cusp of adulthood, that are raging with hormones and they're getting a hard time at school because the papers have said that, you know, their house is haunted. There's all this going on. There's so much rage and confusion.
I can hear what you're saying. I can't escape that loophole. If what they were saying was truly happening, the terror of that would then preclude them from making pretend versions of it up. The whole thing would be too frightening to be devious. It's like someone walking down the street, really cool, leather jacket and shades and stuff. They're dropping all that the second someone jumps out with a knife and says, give me your wallet.
Yeah.
They're not going to stay in character at that point. Yeah. They're dropping everything. You're to your bare bones. So I don't believe that those kids, I would say the fact it was children, would mean they'd be even more frightened. I think when I imagine, and from the little I know about fear and the little that I know about people in extreme terror, of which I cannot envisage anybody who's confronted with a ghost of any kind. If that happened and it was in front of them of any kind, there is no subduing that terror. There's no being cool about it at all. So you cannot, in that state, also carry on maintaining a deception. If you are shown to be maintaining a deception, then you're not in that state. That would be my take on it.
Yeah.
So I'll never make peace with Guy Lyon Playfair. In a way that I don't feel about Maurice Groves. I don't feel about Harry Price, you know, the ghost hunting man from the olden days.
Okay, well, Harry Price actually, I think, has the best definition for a poltergeist. It's really snappy.
Say who Harry Price was, by the way.
Okay, Harry Price was an English writer and, well, a ghost hunter, really. Yeah.
Would he have been considered the first of, like, the modern era of, like, sort of celebrity ghost hunters sort of people?
Really, yeah. I mean, he was a celebrity, and he certainly courted fame as well. And I think it's that sort of intent that he wanted to be in the book of notable people. He wanted an honorary doctorate.
So I think the fact he had those things make him suspect.
Oh, completely,
but I'm not angry about him in the same way.
No. Yeah, when he was about 21 or so, he wrote like a list of things he'd like to achieve that were very fame-centric.
Yeah, just fiercely ambitious.
Yeah, incredibly.
Yeah.
And it's that love of the public eye and courting of fame, coupled with particularly Bawley Rectory and his handling of that case, leads a lot of people to just dismiss him as just solely this fame-hungry ghost hunter.
So what did he say about poltergeists?
He said that a ghost haunts, a poltergeist infests.
Right.
A ghost likes solitude, a poltergeist prefers company.
Okay.
I think that's a really nice definition of the concept, whether or not you believe in it.
Well, one of the issues I've got with poltergeists is that it's too, I mean, this might sound silly, but because you imagine things flying about the place and all the rest of it. But a lot of how I understand it, things that are attributed as being poltergeists.
Yes.
Just bangs. Just knocks.
Yeah.
They're just things that happen in every single house in the world.
Yeah.
Any house that's got central heating, any house that's got aircon, any house that's got a water system, has knocks and creaks and bangs and all that all the time.
Yeah.
And I think many poltergeist cases, as I understand it, aren't pans being chucked about. It's literally...
A lot of them are, knocks.
Yeah. And bangs.
Yeah.
That's the biggest just loophole of that, is when you think poltergeist, you think of the movie Poltergeist, or you think of things smashing up. Yeah. And if you go, there's been 1,000 reported poltergeist cases this year alone.
Mm.
Well, 997 of them might just be
in
the middle of the night.
Yeah.
How's that being logged as a case?
Yeah. I think poltergeists are on a scale.
Yeah.
They're tricky things to define.
Well, all imaginary things are.
The very definition of poltergeist and what would count as a poltergeist report over the centuries has changed so much. So, like, today, if we think about, like, imagine a poltergeist, what is one? We think of a individual who has passed over, comes back generally enraged, and lobs a couple of pans about.
Yeah.
But there was debate for centuries whether or not poltergeists were human spirits or non-human spirits, like elementals, which basically covers anything that's kind of like an ancient force or an ancient kind of mystical being.
So isn't the ghost of somebody?
Yeah, it isn't the ghost of an individual. It can be something else within that pool.
It's just flying about the place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could be anything, but it's not going to be Nana Betty.
Something from Hellboy.
Yeah, there you are. It's either Nana Betty or something from Hellboy.
Yeah, okay.
They're your choices.
Yeah. In terms of what we're doing with loopholes, so if we just go, right, all the knocking ones, get shove them out, that might be a central heating. So, so let's close that loophole, get them out. So let's bring this now down to the things that would be unarguable as unexplained. Are there any cases, open cases of poltergeists that have tons of evidence on film that hasn't been ripped apart and gone, hang on, there's fishing wire there. Yeah. Is that a thing?
Well, not that I know of. I've got to say, I am deeply suspicious of any poltergeist activity that's suddenly uploaded to YouTube it's all hell breaking loose in a kitchen.
Yeah, it's essentially shock and awe is what it is.
Yeah.
I think actually we probably hit on something. So when you mentioned before the naughty little girl theory, well, I can tell you about some people, and I also am aware that when I'm saying this, it sounds like I'm starting one of my stories like I did earlier on. So this is actually genuinely true.
Yeah, okay.
This, because I'm not saying the events are true. I'm saying I know these people.
Yes, okay.
So I know these people who have told me a story about a poltergeist in their house, of things getting broken and smashed and all the rest of it. Now, I happen to like these people. I think that, you know, I like them. I think they're all right. I'm not going to name them. I'm not going to draw attention to them because I'm making a call on something here.
Okay.
I felt quite strongly when I chatted with these people, which I did several times, about this situation, that the girl, the young girl, I felt like she was being abused. I felt like she absolutely believed the story she was telling. And I feel like there were people around her who knew full well it wasn't true. And they had essentially chucked her under the bus to perpetuate this story.
Yeah.
Because this had happened at such a young age to this girl, she didn't have a clue what was real, what had really happened, what had been a lie that had been told so many times. She started forming actual memories of it. And I found it so concerning and so worrying. And one of the things that I considered within all that was, why does stuff like that get a pass? Like, why was I not reporting this to the authorities?
Yeah.
And it was because it was all framed within this ghost story.
Yeah, and it's tricky because it still falls within personal belief.
Yeah.
Doesn't it? So it's tricky to kind of make a call when you're dealing with spiritual matters. I do find it very interesting that when you look through the history of reported poltergeists, so from, like, the drummer of Tedworth, who was, like, 1662... basically, a lot of drumming noises.
Yeah.
That was kind of the first poltergeist.
Yeah.
If we compare that with what you'd conjure up in your mind today,
yeah,
a whole kitchen being ripped out and thrown out the roof.
Yeah.
Poltergeist reports have escalated beyond what they were originally. I think the poltergeist itself has changed to such a degree and has escalated to such a degree, I don't know what would be next, because it seems to be going in one direction.
But my cynicism and my take on all these things has me at a point where I'm like, this could just be, and probably is in many cases, a convenient, ludicrous excuse for abuse.
Again, that's where we get into kind of concerning loophole territory, where within any field of esotericism,
yeah,
if you accept any report or any belief system unwavering, that can be covering up something that's genuinely damaging, whether physically or mentally. As fun and as frivolous and as exciting it and as interesting as it is to look into the world of the paranormal and esoteric, you've always got to remember that it's framed within a tangible world,
yeah,
as well, with real world consequences.
My take on it is that no ghost has ever thrown anyone down the stairs. So if somebody went down the stairs, who did throw them? So when people say that I'm cynical and I'm, oh, you know, fun and all that, it's like, no, let's just actually, let's pull everything back for a second here and look at this. If that kid was chucked down the stairs, I'm telling you now, it wasn't a ghost that did it. So who did? Who did? That person I'm speaking about, I don't think for a second she thought she was lying.
Yeah.
That's the sinister aspect of it.
Yeah.
And I think poltergeists,
yeah,
I think they're a worrying addition because of what they can mask.
Yes. Yeah, I'm 100% with you.
Yeah. Well, this escalated, didn't it? Right, let's crunch back down through the gears and do a fun section.
Yes, don't worry, everybody.
I don't mind that, by the way. I don't mind having discussions like that. Yeah. I think that's quite important because, But anyway, you're going to do your celebrity seance, is that right?
I'm doing my celebrity seance corner.
Do you know what? I'll even allow that at the moment, to lighten the mood.
Exactly, yeah.
So, who's the celebrity?
Hugh Hefner.
Okay.
Yeah, off of Playboy.
Yeah, Hugh Hefner, the proprietor of the Playboy empire.
Yes.
Famous misogynist.
Yes. Deeply unpleasant man. Well, this is... I'm working through all the different media, I feel, with my celebrity seances. And this one was a live stream from 2019. This was a seance held at the house of Holly Madison, who was once Hugh Hefner's number one girlfriend for several years, and subsequently wrote a tell-all book about
how horrific the Playboy Mansion was.
Yeah, it's kind of the reality of it outside of the bubblegum kind of experience.
Which should be quite straightforward. That's another thing, again, where you look at it and you go, hang on. I appreciate you're all playing volleyball and all smiling.
Yeah.
But if this is real, if this one man is going out with all these girls at the same time, and just chucking his money about, there's some damage going on here, isn't there? There definitely is.
Yeah, the whole... I mean, that's a whole rabbit warren, to kind of... Yeah, if you pardon the pun.
Bunny warren.
Yeah.
Go on. So what happens in Hugh Hefner's seance? And can we make a rule, by the way, of not calling him Hef? Because I find... If somebody else says it, fine, you can quote them.
Okay.
But shall we not call him Hef?
Let's not call him Hef.
Yeah, but because I don't like...
No. Throughout a lot of the seance, which... Again, I watched all of it. Well over an hour.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, referred to as Hef.
Well, to put it into some framing, if people don't know about Hugh Hefner and the Playboy Mansion, it was like a very aspirational place.
You know,
it's obviously this big posh mansion full of beautiful young women who were models, who were essentially sexualized objects.
Yeah.
That for some inexplicable reason... was fine.
This sort of like the heyday of the Playboy Mansion being in like the 2000s.
Yeah.
I think is kind of a microcosm of that weird, aspirational, inflated Americana.
And hugely fueled by hedonism, which in and of itself I've not really got an issue with. And people that I would argue that I would respect as performers and as artists and stuff would... very much subscribed to going to the Playboy Mansion and wanting to go there and wanting to experience the parties and all that. Again, which I understand until you go, well, no, what was the party? that you wanted to go to. Yeah. What did you want to do when you got there? What did you want to just observe it, or did you want to indulge in it? Or a very difficult thing. And people wanted desperately to be playmates, as they called it, you know, and people would go to great lengths to get an in at the Playboy Mansion. Like, for example, I know a terribly tragic story about that, really, which is, I know it's been quite heavy today, this podcast, but there was an awful story where I remember Simply was just, he was literally polishing a banister at Graceland.
Yeah.
And Elvis came through and said, "Simply, I need an in." "I need an in at the Playboy Mansion. So Simply, you're going to be my special little playmate." It was awful. I don't even want to tell you about the details of it. Really? It was terrible.
Oh,
awful. I mean, he did it. He got in. I think Simply might still be there. Since I know he was there because I think Elvis died first before Hugh Hefner.
Mm-hmm.
I think Simply was there for a while after Elvis died. And then maybe ultimately escaped when Hugh Hefner was away. So tell me about the Hugh Hefner seance. I personally have always found Hugh Hefner to be a deeply unpleasant idea.
Mm.
I don't know how much of it was true. That's the caveat I'll put in with it.
Okay.
I don't know how much of it was pretend.
Mm-hmm. Well, this live stream was with two former playmates.
Yes.
So there was Holly Madison
and
Bridget Marquardt, who was a former playmate, who I've met. I was on her...
Oh, yeah, you did her podcast,
I did a podcast a while ago. So this, I'm not bashing on these women at all. They're both incredibly accomplished.
I've not done her podcast.
We had a lovely discussion.
Yeah, okay.
She really knows her stuff.
Right, okay, she's fine.
Far more read up on paranormal investigation and even spiritualism than, you know, 90% of the people I've come across in the paranormal
world. So that's her new thing, right? So she was... Was she just a model, or was she porn, or was she...
As far as I know, she was a playmate.
Okay, yeah, so she...
I don't know a lot about her background, really.
Okay, but she was that, so she was a glamour model, essentially.
Yes, yeah.
And then new career in esotericism, which, by the way, it happens a lot, that. It's people's second career.
It does, it really does, yeah.
Yeah, well, Yvette Fielding's a good case in point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Her second career, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They're going into that. So go on, what happened? Did they speak to Hugh Hefner?
Well, via the help of celebrity medium... Patty Negri.
Oh, now she, I don't have a good word to say about.
Throughout this seance,
she
mainly used dowsing rods that are like bent bits of metal that people have used for many, many years to find water, mineral deposits, things like that. But there's kind of been a trend recently of using these dowsing rods, holding them in your hands and using them to answer yes or no questions. So
what they're very good for, dowsing rods, by the way.
Yeah.
They're very good for looking like you're not doing anything.
They are.
They're really good. What I will give them credit as is you can hold them and go, "Look, I couldn't do that. I couldn't change that." So they really are convincing as that.
Yeah.
But if you've ever held a pair of dowsing rods, you would know that you can absolutely control it again. And make it look like you don't. I'm just saying, if you've only ever watched someone use dowsing rods and believed that they're moving on their own, you might want to hold some yourself.
Yeah, if you're so inclined, you can just about take off with them.
Yeah.
They're really easy to move.
Yeah, they are, yeah.
They were used very heavily
in
this. So the rods would cross for yes or apart for no.
Right.
So Holly believed that her house was haunted anyway.
Okay.
This was a Halloween event, so it was a live streamed at Halloween, and only one of them got the memo to wear a costume.
Right.
And Holly was dressed as, like...
Wait.
Okay.
I think I've seen this.
Yeah?
Was she dressed as a Gelfling from the Dark Crystal?
She was.
Okay. I think I've seen this.
Yeah. I mean, as far as Gelflings go...
Yeah.
She looked amazing.
Yeah.
But no one else was dressed up.
No. I hope that wasn't deliberate. I really hope that wasn't deliberate. I don't like that as a practical joke.
No, me neither, because she seems so genuine.
Yeah.
But essentially, she believes that her house is haunted anyway.
Okay.
So the seance starts with everyone having a bit of a donut.
Yep.
Patty says that this is a spiritualist tradition.
Does she?
She does. She also says to put protection oil on the back of your neck because there's a big portal there.
Who's got to do this? The viewers?
All of us. Oh, it was a very interactive experience. So it's kind of a choose your own adventure.
Yeah.
So you play along with the girls.
Yeah. Well, she's selling this oil on her website as well, by the way.
I haven't checked, but I'd probably put money on there being a shop.
My overriding remembrance of this seance while she was selling stuff all the time.
Yeah.
Or many of them were, were talking about... There seems to be quite a lot of product placement in it, as
there
I
really
recall.
There really was, yeah.
Unannounced product placement as well, by the way. There was no...
So we don't really know if it was...
Nothing came on screen saying...
No, don't know if it was paid or if they... That's just how they...
Come on.
How they exist.
Yeah, all right.
The first spirit that pops through the dowsing rods...
Yeah.
..appears to be a good-looking, elegant male spirit who Patty announces that she doesn't think he's a pervert. And it's a man...
So that's not Hugh Hefner?
Nope. So it's... So it's a man that used to live there. The whole thing was kind of interspersed with Q&As. There were a lot of spirits queuing up before we get to the Hefner section of the evening. We had a chat with Bridget's grandfather.
Okay.
They had a password, much like the Houdini situation. They had a password, so if he could come back after he died,
right,
he would say it and she would know that he was there. But instead, Patty just comes up with a sequence of numbers that mean nothing to anyone in the room.
I think that if I actually talk about Patty and what I feel,
mm-hmm,
I will be leaving myself legally wide open.
Okay, well, let's just...
For her to sue me.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take the standpoint of just going, every time you mention Patty from now on.
Well, Bridget brings on a special guest who is her fiancé.
Okay.
And we learn that this is all related to Hugh Hefner. You squint really hard. That he is Hal Roach's grandson.
Oh, grandson, right, okay. Yes. I had nephew in my head for some reason.
I think he was grandson. Okay. And I just have a chat with him.
Yeah, film producer Hal Roach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, who did stuff with Laurel and Hardy the Little Rascals.
Hal Roach Studios, very famous. Yeah. Depending who you listen to, he was like ruthless.
Yes.
So if you listen to no one, he wasn't. Yeah. And he can listen to literally everyone that ever came across him.
So he can ask any question to...
Simply, Hal Roach is going to be there tonight. Simply, put that white t-shirt on. Put it on, Simply. Let me get this hose pipe. Push them together, Simply.
Oh, God. Right, so Hal Roach, her fiancé...
Just push your biceps together and watch magic happen.
Oh, God. So he can ask any of his relatives that passed on a question because the veil is thin because it's Halloween. And his yes or no question is, does his granddad remember bringing his grandchildren peanut brittle?
Right. So he's just told them everything they need to know.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. We're all in it together. Did Hugh Hefner turn up? Because I'm pretty sure I turned it off.
Yes, but he's much like I imagine he would be for many of his mansion parties. Yeah. He arrived fashionably late to his own seance.
No, I think he lived there, didn't he?
He had a lot of...
So unless he went out on purpose so he could come back late.
So, his spirit checks in on his ex-partner, Holly.
Yeah.
He's mainly at the Playboy Mansion.
Yeah.
But we now have it on good authority that he checks in on Holly, his ex, and... just sees that she's doing all right, so he'll create little cold patches.
I mean, I feel like I've been slightly unfair on Hugh Hefner here, because I think I've been quite dismissive of Hugh Hefner as an idea and a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that he's managing to split his time between the Playboy Mansion, visiting his ex, and burning in hell, I think is actually quite an impressive...
It's excellent multitasker, isn't
he? Isn't it?
Sue me.
Hey, Playboy, sue me. Prove he's not.
And that came in the last 5 minutes of an hour seance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like you say, with the product placement, they round it all off with a kind of round table of what apps they're using on their phones.
Oh, God. I'm so glad I turned it off. Is it the ghost hunting apps?
Yeah.
Is it all that?
Loophole.
So So they've had
phones
money.
Phones are not designed to do all these things that these apps say they do. They don't have EMF readers. They're just not. And your best mate, Patty, was saying that she prefers the paid-up version than the free version of this thing. And they were all using them on airplane mode. And anyway, it all ended with that. And then they said you should eat something salty and touch something iron. And if you participate, you'll be a little bit psychic for the next 3 days. But also you should go to bed with a glass of water next to you, but not one you drink, because this glass will taste foul. Because it's going to capture not only germs and dreams and emotions, but also
all
ghosts.
The lies you've just told on your internet broadcast.
So that is the end of Loopholes episode 4.
Felt like a serious one, that.
Was a bit, wasn't it?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
And what I'm worried about right now, before editing it,
yeah.
I'm worried that I've jumped between serious and inappropriate too swiftly.
Yeah.
Genuinely.
Okay.
So apologies if I have done that. There was no intention in that.
No. But we don't have a solemn episode every week, do we?
No, not at all. But I think we have, just by definition, we have discussed some rather weightier things here. So even in the Enfield discussion and all that sort of business, I've spoke about the Enfield case before.
Yeah.
And this is a whole different way of discussing it.
Yes.
This is this isn't going for laughs. I know we have a laugh doing this podcast, but this isn't going for laughs.
Yeah.
But sometimes I forget not to be silly.
Yeah.
Sometimes. And I'll be silly too quick.
Yeah.
Just after making a really serious point about abuse. So, well, if you want to tell me off, here's how you can do it.
You can contact us on Facebook at Loopholes Podcast, on Instagram at Loopholes Pod, on Twitter at Loopholes Pod, and via email if you want to send us a little letter at loopholespodcast@gmail.com.
This is one of the few times that you can say to me, I think you're out of order, where I might go, yeah, fair comment. Thank you for joining us this week. I've been Ian Bolesworth.
And I've been Kate Cheryl.
I mean, I'm sure she's heard something dodgy as well, so I've got her too. Oh. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Loopholes is an Infinite Hermit production in association with Burials and Beyond, with Kate Cheryl and Ian Bolesworth. Music by Thomas Funderay, produced by Ian Bolesworth.